From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Honor AP, a length and a half. Authentic, rushy running on late. It will be Honor AP, a very impressive winner of the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
And Midnight Bizou, bounding past the Twin Spires. Six lengths in front with 100 yards to go. Motion Emotions up into second. Serengeti Empress, nothing late. Under the wire, the magnificent Midnight Bizou.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And now there's an eighth of a mile to the finish. Shatsky digs down on the inside. Monday morning quarterback. But here is Max Player on the outside to take over the lead in deep stretch. And Max Player will win the Withers by almost three lengths.
Castlevaugh's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Castlevaugh and Manny Franco, to win the Belmont Stakes.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning, rise and shine. The show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, is on the air. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch. Happy to have you along for the next couple of hours on another outstanding Saturday for the sport of kings. As always, you're joining me across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or you are listening digitally, and you're doing that on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, 10 graded stakes are scheduled to be run across four racetracks in North America later today. And I'm going to have plenty of conversation about those races as we move throughout the show. But I wanted to begin this morning by congratulating Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie, owner Gary Barber, jockey Tyler Gaffalione, and last year's Preakness winner War of Will on this brilliant performance yesterday afternoon.
High Crime is still the leader. Parlor alongside. Raging Bull trying to find more. Likewise for War of Will. Parlor puts ahead in front from High Crime. War of Will is in third. Raging Bull fourth. Parlor is in front. War of Will still second. Parlor, War of Will, Raging Bull. Late charge from Without Parole at the line. War of Will, maybe. That's a photo for the win. Either that one or Parlor in the Maker's Mark Mile.
What a finish. War of Will getting his nose in front at the wire, doing it just in the nick of time. Kurt Becker had the call. And the son of Claiborne Stallion, Warfront, is now a grade one winner on dirt and turf. And that finish, well, that's what this whole sport is all about, isn't it? What a pretty awesome finish that was yesterday at Keeneland. Keeneland going to host another six stakes races today. Five of those are graded. The grade one Madison, the grade two Shakertown, the grade one Ashland and Jenny Wiley, and grade two Bluegrass. At Belmont, we'll see champion Montemoy Girl return to graded stakes company in the grade two Ruffian. Delaware has the grade three Robert Dick Memorial and grade two Delaware Handicap, and the grade two Connaught Cup is the highlight of today's card at Woodbine. How great is it? This is so cool. How great is it to see Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito back in the Bluegrass Stakes again this year? Nick is currently in a five-way tie among trainers for most wins in the Bluegrass. That list includes Ben Jones, Woody Stevens, Leroy Jolly, and future Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher. Each of them has saddled three winners. Nick will look to make it four later today when he sends out long shot Hunt the Front to his owned by country music superstar Toby Keith and his Dream Walkin' Farms. That's been an interesting development in the sport of thoroughbred racing, an interesting one to watch, that relationship between Toby Keith and Nick Zito. Toby, a couple of years ago when I sat down with him before a concert here in Lexington, talked about horse racing. And by the way, that whole interview is up on our website. You can go back and listen. But he talked about how much he admired Nick Zito. And I know Nick feels the same way. And we'll see if Hunt the Front can give Nick four victories in the Bluegrass. That would certainly be an historic moment if Nick is standing in the winner's circle later today. We'll also see history if trainer Ken McPeak gets his picture taken alongside his filly, Swiss Skydiver, after that race later today. She'll be only the second filly to take on the boys in the Bluegrass since Keeneland's inaugural spring meet in 1937. And, oh, by the way, she is your 3-1 morning line favorite against the boys in that race. You're going to hear from trainer Kenny McPeak in just a few minutes around 8:15 Eastern. Nick Zito will also join me coming up at 8:35. Fun first half of the program. Our coverage of the Bluegrass, by the way, later this afternoon begins at 5 o'clock Eastern. It's all presented by Red Brand Fence. It'll be hosted by Bobby Newman and Anthony Stabile. That's 5 o'clock Eastern. Coverage of the Bluegrass, Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates across the country and streaming worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. So if you can't be in front of a television, we got you covered on the radio side. Second half of the show kicks off with owner Bob Edwards of E5 Racing, and that happens at 9 o'clock Eastern as he prepares to watch his ultra-talented 5-year-old mare Rushing Fall defend her title in the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley. It would also provide trainer Chad Brown with a third consecutive win in that race and his fourth in the last six runnings. He has really been dominant. Well, dominant not just in that race, but many turf races across the country over the past several years. Rushing Fall is the 6-5 morning line favorite in today's Jenny Wiley. And you'd be hard-pressed to find a hotter trainer than Brad Cox the past couple of years. Fresh off a sweep of both the Indiana Oaks and Indiana Derby on Wednesday night at Indiana Grand, he's going to send out the brilliant Monomoy Girl in today's Grade 2 Ruffian at Belmont. And a pair of horses in the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley, hoping to find a way to knock off the defending champ, Rushing Fall. Of course, Monomoy Girl, a daughter of Gainesway stallion Tapazar. And she has been so, so good. What a return to the races. What a training job by Brad, getting her back in that allowance win at Churchill last time out. Now she's back in Grade 2 company and looking to continue to make her case as a major player in that division. There's another mare out there by the name of Midnight Bisou who figures to be pretty tough in there too. And as we know, COVID-19 continues to dominate the headlines across our country and around the world. And over the past 24 hours, it has become even more noteworthy in the sport of thoroughbred racing as it was announced late yesterday afternoon that jockeys Luis Saez, Martin Garcia, and Victor Espinoza have all tested positive for coronavirus. All three obviously taken off their mounts that they were named to ride. And I want to wish each of them, first and foremost, all the best as they begin the process of moving past this virus. And as I was thinking about it, I think that, in my opinion, the primary concern here is the fact that each of these jockeys, much like trainers, and to a lesser extent some owners, have been traveling to multiple tracks over the past week or so. Luis Saez, Martin Garcia, Victor Espinoza. I mean, look at where they've been. Los Alamitos, Keeneland, Indiana Grand. They've been well-traveled. And we know that every racetrack is making every effort to keep jockeys, trainers, owners, and those who work at the track safe and healthy. But this is a concern. And what happens if this turns out to be just the tip of the iceberg and we start seeing other jockeys, maybe in larger numbers, maybe quicker, come up with positive tests? Prairie Meadows announced new protocols yesterday where out-of-state horses from Texas and Florida, where we're seeing significant spikes, will only be allowed to run at that track if they are transferred to a trainer currently stabled at Prairie Meadows. Do we eventually see this at other tracks? Is this a new protocol maybe? Is this the first domino to fall when it comes to that? And might we also see that same type of protocol with jockeys? Where, for example, only riders currently based at a particular track are allowed to ride there. Could happen. Obviously a very fluid situation, but it's something that racing needs to be prepared to handle. And I think we have been preparing for it, but we've been pretty lucky. Because of the safety protocols that are in place at the racetracks, we haven't seen a mass number of jockeys or trainers or horsemen or people that work at the racetracks coming up with positives. And with that said, I think our sport is a little different, maybe more comparable to golf, for example, maybe even NASCAR. And maybe even in a better position in regards to COVID than, say, for example, the NFL. In the NFL, you're talking about athletes getting together 11 on 11. And let's say, for example, that the New York Jets and the Baltimore Ravens are playing in a game. I know you're surprised I didn't use the Steelers as an example. But let's say that those two teams are playing, any two teams. And after the game, four or five offensive linemen on the New York Jets test positive for COVID. Well, you got to kind of figure that the defensive linemen and those individuals on the defense that were in contact with the offensive linemen may also come up with a positive test. And if that happens, you're talking about a two-week gap where those athletes have to sit out and make sure they're okay and they have to recover. And at what point does the integrity of the game start to become compromised? That's the NFL. We're in a little better position. Again, probably a little bit more comparable to golf. And especially if you're a racetrack owner and you want to take that approach and say, okay, no outside riders, no outside trainers. If you want to send a horse here, much like Prairie Meadows is doing, you have to just send the horse, but it has to be sent to a trainer that's already on the grounds. Just some things to think about as we continue to figure out this entire situation. So that leads me to the poll question, too. And you can go to @HRN on Twitter. I want to hear your thoughts on this. If you're in charge of a racetrack, if you are in charge of a racetrack where a rider tests positive for COVID-19, how would you handle the situation? What are you going to do? I want to get the conversation started, and I'll try to read through some of the responses later in the program. If you're in charge of a racetrack where a rider tests positive for COVID-19, how would you handle the situation? Go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know your thoughts. All right, coming up, trainer Ken McPeak, who sat down with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, on Red Brand Radio earlier this week. You'll hear from him talking about his Philly Swiss Skydiver in today's Bluegrass. Hall of Famer Nick Zito at 8:35, Bob Edwards from E5 Racing at 9 o'clock, and Brad Cox to round out the program at 9:40. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network. You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Take Charge Lady is going to live up to her advanced billing. Tony D'Amico brings her home in front to win the Ashland by five.
Rosalind trying to reach the wire. Room Service trying to catch her. Rosalind, Room Service, driving finish. Photo for the win in the Central Bank Ashland.
Harlan's Holiday has the advantage clear from Booklet. He opens up by 2.5. Further back, Straight Gin and Azillion running late. But it's too late to catch Harlan's Holiday. He will take the 78th running of the Toyota Bluegrass Stakes by a convincing margin.
Jabba's War is still coming. So is Charming Kitten. Jabba's War chasing Palace Malice. Jabba's War from last to first for Julian Leperoux. They have won the Toyota Bluegrass.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. A Saturday morning that is a big day here in the Bluegrass with all the graded stakes action at Keeneland. That includes the Grade 1 Ashland and the Grade 2 Bluegrass Stakes. That little montage, you could call it a Kurt Becker montage, the voice of Keeneland, the only voice that Keeneland has ever known in the announcer's booth. Or you could call it a Ken McPeak montage with all of his victories coming in those two races. Take Charge Lady in the 2002 Ashland. Rosalind coming back. You remember the dead heat in 2014 in that race. Harlan's Holiday in 2002 taking the Bluegrass. And then Java's War winning the 2013 Bluegrass. Kenny is back later today with Swiss Skydiver, the filly looking to make history and become the first filly ever to win the Bluegrass Stakes. She's already qualified for the Kentucky Oaks. Now she'll look to punch her ticket to the Run for the Roses if they choose to go that way on September 5th. She'll have plenty of options if she can pull it off. And earlier, Kenny took the time to sit down with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, on our Red Brand radio show, and here's what he had to say about his ultra-talented filly.
Swiss Skydiver drew mid-pack in a field of 13. Going to take on the boys for the first time in the Grade 2 Bluegrass on Saturday. Talk a little bit about this filly by Daredevil.
Well, you know, she's really come around this year. Anybody that's watched her last three races, she's done everything right in the last three, and kind of an unusual year, as we all know. Any other season, I wouldn't even consider entering her in the Bluegrass, probably. Although we've got another filly that we're really fond of that's in the Ashland, who doesn't have any Oaks points at all. And, you know, the Colts division looked like it was coming up just average. It didn't look like there was any beasts in there. And she gets weight from everybody. And we thought, well, you know what? Maybe it's one of those years to give it a run. And we're going to find out.
You mentioned how she's come around this year. Ran her a couple of times earlier this year. She just got beaten a little stakes at Tampa. Then got beat a half a dozen lengths or so in the Rachel Alexandra. After that, you guys got a little more aggressive with her in her races. She went from being a mid-pack slash closer to front runner. How much of the style change do you attribute to her success?
Well, I always teach my young horses how to come from off the pace. I believe it comes in handy at some point where you don't get somewhat pigeonholed as a horse that has to have the front and where they're adaptable and rateable, and they have to learn to, you know, inside outside horses and adversity, and so we tend to try to teach them that in their first couple three starts. The race at Tampa was a bit of a throwout. I mean, I think it was just one of those really what could go wrong went wrong, and I really, in hindsight, probably should have run her in the Suncoast, which was a couple of weeks separated, and it would have been a two-turn race, and she probably would have got it done that day. But, you know, it's all these horses, they evolve, and things have to come together, and you obviously learn more about them as you go. And she's a filly that once we got that two-turn niche down and she got in rhythm and she started understanding that she needed to lay a little closer, and then she's got that killer instinct at this stage, too.
You are going to team up with Hall of Famer Mike Smith, who rode her last time in the Santa Anita Oaks. Always a good thing, of course, especially with the fillies. He just seems to have a knack with them.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I chose not to ship Ryan Hernandez west because obviously Mike rides out there, and he was opening the race. So we let him have the mount out there. And then through a series of business deals. You know, Hernandez had ridden Art Collector, I think, three races in a row. And after his win, his agent gave that call away. So I said, that's fine. We'll just keep Mike aboard. And it's one of those high-level problems. And anytime you've got Mike Smith or Ortiz or those kind of guys up there, you're in good shape.
I think a lot of people were surprised that Swiss Skydiver went into the Bluegrass simply based on the fact that the Ashland's still a grade one, Bluegrass is a grade two. Did that play any, was that one of the factors that maybe had you thinking Ashland with Swiss Skydiver as well before ultimately settling on the Bluegrass?
It was the hardest part. If there was a negative out of the decision making, that was it. Grade one as opposed to grade two. But of course we run for 200,000 more in the Bluegrass, and Ashland certainly, it was hard to say no to run in that spot. But at the same time, we do think that, you know, she's nominated the Triple Crown and she's got her Oaks points. We don't have any pressure as far as that goes. If she's good enough to jump through this hoop, let's say she runs real impressive in this spot, you know, then we got a serious question to ask ourselves. Do we run her in the Oaks, I mean in the Derby, as opposed to the Oaks? I think it's an easier decision if you don't win. If she doesn't win this weekend, then it says, okay, well, we'll shift her back and we can always run her in the Alabama, or we can wait for the Oaks in September. So these are high-level problems. I mean, this is what you work hard for, is to get these kind of horses. And I think also, you know, Peter Callahan is a game owner. He liked the challenge of it all. He thought, hey, that'd be fun. And we really need to get down to, hey, it is just fun. And it's the kind of problems I want to have, these kind of decisions. And when you don't have horses in these kind of races, then you really worry.
We talked about how her front-running style has been handy in her last three wins, Gulfstream Park Oaks, the Fantasy, and the Santa Anita Oaks. When you give Mike Smith a leg up on Saturday, do you give him any instructions? Do you let him, you know, it's obviously a little different beast now. You're taking on the boys, and she's kind of beat her fellow sophomore fillies pretty handily. Do you just let him call it as he sees it, leaving that there? Or do you, you know, hey, you know, this has worked. Let's be close.
Well, I don't think you tell Picasso or Rembrandt what to do, do you? You hand him a brush and you say, go at it. That'll be my approach with Mike. I mean, Mike's a great judge of pace. And if he feels like, I mean, just a quick look at the PPs, there's three horses on the inside, I think in the 1-2 and the 3-hole, that all show early speed. And I think she showed in Arkansas that she doesn't have to have the lead. I mean, she can be a filly that stalks if necessary. And like I said, I'll leave that up to Mike. You can overthink these things. I've had horses in years past where, you know, everybody got all over analyzing and reanalyzing. Let the man go out there and do his job. And if she's good enough, so be it.
Let's talk a little Ashland, talk a little En Voutant. I know this is a filly you've been high on for a while. A couple of turf starts sprinkled in between three dirt starts. You kind of let her find her own way and she bring you back to the dirt, or just mixing it up with those turf races?
Situations. We wanted to run her two turns early on. The race wouldn't go. We wanted to run her in. She was going to either run in the Fantasy or there was an overnight stake the same day as the Fantasy at Oakland. She got excluded out of both races, which I found very unusual. There ended up being five scratches out of the undercard race. She's a filly that really wants even more distance. A mile and a eighth, mile and a quarter won't hurt her feelings at all. And I think this filly's primed to not only run a big one here, but to fire a backup shot in the Alabama, which is where we'll probably go with her next, because I think a mile and a quarter she's going to relish. I think she's a better filly than Eskimo Kisses, whom we won the Alabama with.
Wow! All
yeah.
Right, well.
So I mean, she. And if you get a chance to look at her in the paddock, she is an absolutely gorgeous filly. Actually, if you held her and Swiss Skydiver next to each other, Swiss Skydiver is probably a filly that's not as obvious She's more compact and quicker. This other filly's got a lot of leg on her. Beautiful deep shoulder, wonderful hip. And both fillies are owned by great clients. Three Chimneys Farm is the principal or one of the principals with Walking L Thoroughbreds on En Voutant. And then Pete Callahan, I've had horses for years. And great, both are all three of them great customers. So, and I think it's maybe in a way Swiss Skydiver kind of moving out of the way a little bit to give En Voutant a chance to show her game. And fingers crossed it all works out.
Anthony on Red Brand Radio earlier this week, and yeah, fingers crossed it all works out. Two live chances later today at Keeneland. En Voutant, I think she can be an absolute beast. You heard him say she's better than Eskimo Kisses, who was Kenny's big horse that took him to some pretty good places. En Voutant, look at what she's done going long on the dirt. She's really just toyed with the competition. She's done it in front-running style. She's done it coming from off the pace. And she's 5-1 on the morning line in today's Ashland. I think she's going to be a handful for Kenny McPeak. And I think the line of the interview, I thought that was fantastic. When Anthony asked Kenny about giving a leg up to Mike Smith, who will be aboard the filly Swiss Skydiver in the Bluegrass. And he said, do you give him any kind of instructions, you know, going up against the boys or whatever it might be? Keep in mind, Mike Smith beat the boys with Zenyatta, so he knows a thing or two about that. And Kenny said, well, do you say anything to Picasso or Rembrandt? No, you just hand him the brush and let him go. And that's what he's going to do with Mike Smith. Hand him the brush and let him take the reins and take control over Swiss Skydiver. And you also heard Kenny say, look, if we win this race, if we win the Bluegrass, we now are eligible to get into the Kentucky Derby field. And then we have to make a decision. Do we go to the Derby? Do we go to the Oaks? She's already got enough points to get into the Oaks. That's not a problem. She'll be dual qualified. And he said, that's the kind of problem I want to have. I think every trainer would like to have that problem. Great stuff from Kenny McPeak, and my thanks to him. Good luck with his horses coming up later today. Come back after this Legends of the Turf segment, which is brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington every Saturday at this time. I'm going to visit with a true Legend of the Turf, Hall of Famer Nick Zito. Received an email from a listener earlier this week when he found out that Nick was going to be on the program, and he described Nick as a Hall of Famer's Hall of Famer. And I love that. I think that's so appropriate. Nick Zito has been so good for this sport for so many years, and I can't wait for this visit coming up here in just a few minutes. But first, it is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty, right here in Lexington, Kentucky.
This is the story of a man who, by accomplishment, was the picture of a veritable giant on the palette of the world of thoroughbred racing. From modest beginnings in Pennsylvania to his death at the age of 86, he had experienced unparalleled success in both racing and breeding. The green and white silks of his stable were accountable for four Kentucky Derby winners. He was born December 12, 1859, in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, where in his early years he worked in steel mills and other industrial establishments. Recognizing very quickly that his future lay in other forms of human endeavor, so to speak, he heeded Horace Greeley's advice to head west to become a part of our nation's then burgeoning westward expansion. He became both a prospector and a gold miner, and in a relatively short period of time managed to accrue enough equity to head for the windy city on the banks of Lake Michigan, Chicago, where he began to invest in real estate. In 1898, at the age of 39, he acquired a small stable of horses as part of following a physician's advice to get out into the open air more extensively. The first horse he purchased was named Fair John, and that horse registered the first win for the soon-to-be-renowned stable at Harlem, Illinois, July 27, 1898. The best of his early stable of thoroughbreds was named Bad News, because it traveled so fast, of course, who was by Flying Dutchman out of Black Sleeves. The horse had been purchased as a three-year-old from Woodford and Buckner. In 1906, he bought a 335-acre tract of land in the Bluegrass of Kentucky and expanded his interest into breeding. That farm eventually embraced some 1,500 acres and housed such prominent stallions as Helmet, Black Tony, North Star III, Black Servant, Bubbling Over, Burgo King, Balladeer, Bimlick, and Blue Larkspur. The name of the farm was Idlehour Farm and spawned four homebred Kentucky Derby winners. Behave Yourself in 1921, Bubbling Over in 1926, Burgo King in 1932, and Broker's Tip in 1933. The latter broke his maiden in that Derby win in that infamous stretch duel with Head Play. Other notables from a virtually endless list that came from the Idlehour Farm just outside Lexington included Baba Kenny, Big Pebble, B-Mac, and Busher. This gentleman accumulated enormous wealth from a variety of vocational interests, including Chicago real estate holdings, extensive newspaper interests, and the Beach Club Casino in Palm Beach, Florida. He was a man widely known for his charity and philanthropy, with extensive involvement in projects such as orphanages and other worthy enterprises. Among his turf-related accomplishments were the development of the Fairgrounds Racetrack in New Orleans as a winter site for thoroughbred racing, and through his breeding stock was greatly responsible for the success of such subsequent luminaries of the world of racing as John W. Galbraith, Edward Morris, and movie mogul Louis B. Mayer. He died at the age of 86 on August 15, 1946, although the permanent influence of this octogenarian on the history and development of the American turf will always be indelibly emblazoned on its most glowing of pages. That man who made the green and white silks of the Idlehour Farm, the stuff of which legends are made, was a true titan of the thoroughbred world, and his story is indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing. He was Colonel E. R. Bradley.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
First crop two-year-olds by Airdrie Studs Upstart are the talk of the industry. At the OBS March sale, all six offered were sold for an average of $260,000, a spectacular return on his $10,000 stud fee. The $600,000 sale-topping colt out of Blue Burrow was one of two upstarts purchased by leading agent Mike Ryan, who said, "We won't find a better horse this year." Upstart has sired 101 first crop juveniles of 2020 and stands at Airdrie Stud for $10,000 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Brisnet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Brisnet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here comes Spank the Bold in front by three lengths. Price open second and nowhere to play third. It was Spank the Bold winning it, taking this year's running of the Bluegrass Stakes by 2.5 lengths. Spank the Bold on the outside with Chris Adley taking command. Along the inside, Best Pal into the second spot. Main Minister is third, coming 70 yards to the finish and far away from the rail.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron in the backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. What a way to bring it back from the commercial break there, huh? Strike the Gold for trainer Nick Zito. Dave Johnson had the call on ABC. strike the gold, winning the Bluegrass, going on to win the Kentucky Derby. Only 11 horses have ever done that. Pulled off that Bluegrass Stakes Kentucky Derby double, strike the gold in 1991, the last one to do it. Think about that. There have been others who have run in the Bluegrass, prepped in the Bluegrass, and come out of that race and gone on to win the Kentucky Derby. But strike the gold in 1991, the last horse to win both. And Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Busy morning for Nicky, so we're not going to keep him long. But, Nick, appreciate a few minutes, my friend.
Well, that's good, Mike. It's always good. You guys do a great job. I listen to you all the time when you can. And you do a super job. And I like that trainer talk, too. You do a good job.
I appreciate that, Nicky, and talking to one of the legendary trainers in the sport right now. I had a listener describe you as a Hall of Famer's Hall of Famer, and I thought that was appropriate.
That's really nice. Well, you know, we eat, sleep, and drink one job. You know, I had many years ago when I was a teenager, before that I would cut bread, and then I would deliver meat, and then after that, when I was 17, that was it. So that's all she wrote. I've been doing this forever. So thank him for saying that, or he or she, whoever it is. Thank him very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, listen, I just played the stretch call of strike the goal, winning the Bluegrass and the Kentucky Derby. I mentioned he's the last horse to pull off the double and win both of those races. That name, strike the gold, has to bring back some incredible memories for you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mike. I think that's, you know, we're really proud of that. And, you know, we don't have to, you know, the Bluegrass takes a backseat to no one. It's a famous race. And I think, you know, all the horses that have participated in the Bluegrass, God, you can't count how many have went on, whether they've won it or not, and won the Derby or Preakness or Belmont or tremendous races the rest of their careers. Well, I was very happy we were very happy to win that race with him. He always wanted to go to Kentucky, and I always wanted to participate in the Bluegrass because it's got so much tradition and so many great horses, and, you know, I just, I loved it. And really happy. It's interesting how, it's a trivia question, how he's the last horse to win both the Derby, you know, and win the Bluegrass and the Derby. And it's funny, I call it the Kentucky Triple Crown. People might say, what is the Kentucky Triple Crown? I think it's the Bluegrass, the Derby, and then when the Breeders' Cup Classic is in Kentucky. So we almost did that too. He didn't do too well in the Classic. He was fifth and had some traffic problems, but it's interesting. So, very proud of that. And, it's just a trivia question, but, just about every horse that runs in the Bluegrass and does well, finishes second, goes on and does something big. Louis Couture, if you remember, that was our horse. He was second in the Bluegrass. He went on to win the Preakness, and on and on and on and on. There's so many great horses that have skipped away, I think, won the Bluegrass. And, you know, it was a tremendous race. Sorry to go on today, but thank you for mentioning strike the gold. So brought back some good memories.
Yeah, and he was one of my favorite horses, still is to this day. I loved watching him run. I loved his running style, and such a cool horse. You know, I mentioned earlier, Nicky, that you are currently in a 5-way tie as the trainer who has saddled the most winners of the Bluegrass. You're tied with Ben Jones, Woody Stevens, Leroy Jolly, and Todd Pletcher with 3 wins in the race. And if somehow Hunt the Front can find a way to get the victory today, you're going to stand alone atop that list.
Yeah, that'd be great. I had not to complain, but I had a couple of seconds that I think we could have won the Bluegrass. But, no, that's great company, and that'd be great. And, yeah, it'd be nice. You know, I'm looking forward to a good performance from him today. And I got a great jockey in Corey Landry. I'm thankful for that. And we'll see what happens. If he can save ground, he's got that outside post. He did that in Arkansas, in Oakland Park, and we did very, very well. So I think we're going to be okay.
All right, I'll let you go in just a minute, Nicky, but real quick, tell me about the relationship you have with owner Toby Keith and Dreamwalkin' Farms. Toby talked to me a couple of years ago. I sat down with him for an interview before a concert here in Lexington at Rupp Arena, and he described Nick Zito as being salt of the earth, and keeping people like yourself in good stock.
Yeah, well, you know, he's just a super person, and I can't tell you, I just love working for Dreamwalking, and nothing would make me happier for this horse to hit the board or just somehow, you know, find a way and what do they call it, upset? Well, one of those, that would be great, because he's a tremendous person, and he's a great human being, and I can't thank him enough, him and his whole people. They have a great staff. Lyndon Branch, you know, does the racing, and Tommy's sister does all of other stuff. I mean, they're just super, super people, and Toby's he's one of a kind, that's for sure. And hey, listen, you know, while you're talking about Toby, he's got that, you know, one of the songs I really love. I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. So I'm hoping that could happen today. That'd be good, right?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Nicky, there is nobody better. And listen, good luck in the bluegrass. I know you're busy, so I'll let you go. But good luck today, and as always, appreciate the visit, my friend. It's always great to hear your voice.
No, we'll do it. We'll do it again. And yeah, we're just a little busy. We got some horses to breeze right now, Mike. But you do a great job, and tell your audience and tell everybody. God bless, and as they say, stay safe and have a great bluegrass. Thank you, Mike.
You too, Nicky. Good luck. Nick Zito sending out Hunt the Front, 30-1 on the morning line in today's bluegrass. And again, didn't get a lot of time to talk to him about the horse and why he feels that this horse deserves a shot. But you heard him talk about, you know, saving some ground and the way he ran two starts ago when he broke his maiden, mile and an eighth at Oaklawn. He's up against it today. He is a long shot, and I love Nicky's line. Not as good as I once was, but as good once as I ever was. Toby Keith's song, and boy, what a way for Nick Zito to stand atop that list and get number four today with a long shot like Hunt the Front. It would be great to see. And I have a world of respect for Nick Zito. And you may have heard me tell this story on the program before. I haven't told it in a while, though. But when my wife, Michelle, and I were first looking to make the move from Massachusetts to Kentucky, we came down kind of a reconnaissance trip, checked everything out, get a lay of the land, talk to a few people, see where we may want to move to, what areas of Lexington, whatever it might be. And I can remember it was during the April race meet, and we were here for the Lexington Stakes. And Nick was going to run Chamois Davis, if you remember that horse, Chamois Davis, in the Lexington that year. And we were at Keeneland, one of the first times we had ever gone. Matter of fact, that may have actually been the first time we've ever been to Keeneland. I think it was. And we were standing by the paddock and just wanted to say hello to Nick Zito. Nick Zito, to this day, still my wife's favorite trainer. And she wanted to get the opportunity to meet Nick Zito. Here we are, two kids from Massachusetts, don't know anybody in Kentucky, have no right going up to the paddock and trying to say hey to Nick Zito. It was very intimidating. Put yourself in that situation. It was very intimidating. But we talked to the security guard. We struck up a conversation, and he was nice enough to let us into the paddock. And he said, listen, you're going to have one opportunity at this. When Nick comes up, and you picture it at Keeneland, they come up from the barn area, they come through that stone enclosure, and they walk into the paddock at the far end. He said, you're going to have one chance. So when Nick comes up, go introduce yourself before he gets busy and starts saddling the horse. So here's Nick Zito, and he walks in with Chamois Davis. And we said, what the hell? You get one shot. The worst he's going to do is tell you, get away from me, kid. But he didn't. He stood there. We introduced ourselves. He talked to us. He put his arm around Michelle, took a picture. And ever since that day, I have had just a world of respect for Nick Zito, not just the trainer, but the person. And every time he sees us, he's as warm and welcoming as he was that first day. Would be so cool to see Nick Zito and Hunt the Front find a way to win that race later today. But again, he's very busy. You heard him talk about having horses to breeze. I wanted to keep him for a longer visit, but you know, this, look, I mean, when you're talking to trainers at this time of the day, keep in mind, they're working. This is when they do their I mean, they work in the afternoons, too, when they're saddling horses, but this is when they're busiest, when they're training. I mentioned that Toby Keith comment. Here's what he had to say about the man who will saddle or train his horse later today.
For the most part, it's really, really good quality people that you want to run into at the track. You know, you meet, like, I deal with Nick Zito a lot. He's salt of the earth. And I know there's people in every business that, my business especially, there's a-holes everywhere. I try not to be one because we don't need another one. But so when I find guys like Zito and that, Jack Vanberg, the Von Hamels, people like that, I try to keep them in good stock.
Well, I was going to play that for Nick just to let him know that Toby doesn't think he's an a-hole. But true Toby Keith fashion, if you're going to interview Toby Keith, you better be ready for some of those types of comments. And look, he thinks the world of Nick Zito. Nick, as you heard, thinks the world of him. And we'll see. Now, if you're looking at the favorite, we heard from Ken McPeak in the previous segment, that interview with Kenny talking about Swiss Skydiver in the Bluegrass today. Again, I told you at the top of the show, she'll be the first filly, and only the second to run in it, by the way, since 1937. But she'll be the first one to win it. And he talked about having options if she can pull it off, and Peter Callahan, the owner, being a very game owner. He likes the idea of this being a fun type of thing to do, to take on the boys. And I liked when Kenny said, we got to remember that this is fun. It's horse racing. Yeah, it's a business. We get caught up in that all too often, but this is fun. This is what we all love. And Swiss Skydiver, look, she has been at her best the last three starts of her career, winning the Santa Anita Oaks last time out, the Fantasy the time before that, and the Gulfstream Park Oaks before that. She doesn't need to take her track with her, that's for sure. She'll win anywhere, and she'll run well anywhere. She'll handle that Keeneland surface today. And, by the way, the weather in Lexington is supposed to be gorgeous. If you're wondering about the track conditions, it should be fast and firm. Going to be low to mid-80s. Spectacular day. Plenty of sunshine. But Swiss Skydiver is at her best when she's forwardly placed. On the lead, just stalking the pace. And there are others in here that have some early zip. The horse right to her outside, Basin, for Steve Asmussen. He's a grade one winning sprinter. Remember, he won the hopeful at Saratoga last year. He has some early pace to him. Expect him to be up relatively close. Shivery from the inside, not quite sure if he can be as quick as Swiss Skydiver, but he's pretty quick. Look at what he did in his last race. If he runs like that, he will be. It was a mile race, allowance race at Gulfstream, 23 flat, 45 flat for the half. He's got some early pace to him. So if either of those two decide that they want to put some pace pressure on Swiss Skydiver, they can make things a little bit difficult for her. This is also a mile and an eighth race, furthest she's ever been asked to go. All three of those wins I just referenced against the girls, mile and a 16th. You know, Harvey Pack in New York, who I grew up watching doing the replay shows, used to always say when he would wrap up or when he would talk about a horse like Swiss Skydiver that you never bet a horse as the favorite being asked to do something for the first time. Well, Swiss Skydiver is going to be the favorite. She's going to be asked to take on the boys for the first time, to go a mile and an eighth for the first time, and to run at Keeneland for the first time, if you want to look at it like that. I think she's vulnerable today. I think you look elsewhere for the winner of the Bluegrass Stakes. Would be fun to see history made in that respect, but I think you look elsewhere. And I'll talk more about that in the second half of the program. I'll share my thoughts on who I think can win the Bluegrass today and make their way to the Kentucky Derby on September 5th. All right, going to get to another break. getting close to the second half of the program. It kicks off with Bob Edwards of E5 Racing talking about rushing fall and her title defense in today's Grade 1 Jenny Wiley. That comes up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Second half of the show also features Brad Cox as he gets set to saddle Monomoy Girl in New York today. Could be a wet track in New York. You have the storm that's making its way up there into New York now. I think Monomoy Girl can handle it, though. I think she'll be okay. But we'll talk to Brad Cox about that coming up at 9:40 Eastern. I'm back with more right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Anchor Down has built a 5-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainsway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4/5, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half-brother to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu, Anchor Down strongly resembles his champion sire. And buyers agree, with First Crop yearlings selling for up to $250,000 in 2019 and First Crop two-year-olds selling for up to $270,000 this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Racing is coming back this summer, and HRRN will be there every step of the way. Join us on July 11th for our coverage of the Bluegrass Stakes from Keeneland. And tune in August 1st for the Whitney Stakes and August 8th for the Travers, live from Saratoga. And as always, HRRN is your radio home for the Triple Crown, with the Kentucky Derby on September 5th and the Preakness Stakes on October 3rd. Plus, we'll have the Charlestown Classic from Charlestown and the Virginia Derby from Colonial Downs and all the major stakes races from Belmont, Keeneland, Woodbine, Pimlico, Laurel Park, Santa Anita, and more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events. Visit our website, horseracingradio.net, to see our complete summer and fall schedule.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, if you're looking for live streaming and replays from nearly any racetrack out there, check out RTN.TV, the Racetrack Television Network. RTN has the most HD content of any streaming service and is available on many devices, including TVs, PCs, tablets, smartphones, Roku, and Amazon Fire TV. And as a special treat for all of our listeners, if you use promo code capital HRRN when you sign up at RTN, you're going to get your first 7 days of live streaming and replays absolutely free. You can't beat it. RTN.TV is the place to go. Many, many listeners have already signed up for RTN, and I encourage you to do the same. Check it out. Get your first 7 days for free by using promo code HRRN at RTN.TV. Well, I told you the second half of the program is going to be busy, and then we'll get to that here in just a minute, but it is time for your Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris. And keep in mind that Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, our brain trust, Malagasy and South Bend. Stuart Morris knows your source. He is your source for success at the highest levels, and you can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales. Well, your industry star of the week on this Saturday morning is jockey Holly Doyle. Based in Europe, she landed her first group race of her career this past week when she won the Princess of Wales Tattersall Stakes at Newmarket, and she is your industry star of the week.
I was just a bit worried it wasn't the plan. Had to resort to plan B. It was a muddling race early on. She's a big stride in filly, and I had to decide whether I was going to attempt to settle her for much longer and maybe not get home in this ground, or I just let her use herself, and she actually settled nicely then when I got a bit of daylight in front.
Could you have done without the rain?
To be honest, Ed was quite concerned about the rain. But to be honest, she felt like she handled it really nicely. She's won on heavy ground in Deauville, so I think she loved it.
And great day for you. First group winner. This is yet another landmark day. We had one last month. One landmark day a month will do nicely, won't it?
Yeah, no, it was excellent. I knew she's talented, but I maybe wasn't expecting it today from her. And to do it the way she's done it is just incredible, really, after a 301-day layoff, I think. So it's a great training performance.
Because if she wasn't going to get home, there were lots of horses waiting behind to almost wait for you to stop, weren't there?
Yeah, you've got, the Hamdan and Simcox. They're all very nice, talented hold-up horses. So I was just kind of waiting for them to join me at the furlong pole. But she stays further than this today, and she was tough.
Do you pinch yourself how well it's going at the moment, or just look at the next win? I mean, you've had such a wonderful couple of months, riding Winners for Fun, Royal Ascot, now this. What's the next ambition?
I just want to keep building my profile and riding as many winners as I can, and hopefully get on some more nice horses.
That's Holly Doyle, our industry star of the week, winning her first group race of her career, probably the first of many. She is a very talented rider. That came in the Princess of Wales Tattersall Stakes at Newmarket. And I hope I get the horse's name right. Dame Maliot is the horse that got her there and took her to the top in that victory. So congratulations to Holly Doyle, this week's Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. I've got a minute here before we get to our station ID and the second half of the program. Again, Bob Edwards set to join me from E5 Racing coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. But I want to remind you that inside the July 11th issue of Blood Horse Magazine, don't miss the many feature stories, which include Daily Life, meeting needs racetrack chaplaincy of America's Umberto and Karen Chavez as they serve a unique congregation at the Naira Tracks. You can also check out Double Vision. You can check out what's going on here, the COVID crop of 2020 juveniles off to a bit of a slow start, that article by Evan Hammonds. And all you have to do is sign up at bloodhorse.com/digital, where digital subscriptions are also available and for a limited time. And you can download a copy of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or from Google Play. Pretty cool stuff. And, of course, I have Blood Horse as my homepage on my computer. So if you want to check it out online, go to bloodhorse.com. All right, second half of the program includes Bob Edwards kicking it off from E5 Racing and Brad Cox at 9:40 Eastern Time. It's a busy second half. We'll get right to it after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And it's Authentic who's still very strong on the front end. And he pulls away with authority. Authentic is undefeated as he will romp in the San Felipe, a very easy 2.5 lengths.
Gamine's running up the score. Oh, look at this fine filly romp here. John Velasquez lets her roll at the 16th pole, and she has absolutely destroyed the acorn field.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
It's Modernist toward the inside for Junior Alvarado. Major Fed closing, New York Traffic Gamely, and then Mailman Money. It's Modernist Modernist and Junior Rivera and Junior Alvarado at 12-1. Modernist has won it.
Tom's Detas shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dust is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth. But with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's Detas.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, July 11th, 2020. And if you missed any portion of the program so far, the first half of the show included interviews with trainer Kenny McPeak and Hall of Famer Nick Zito. All you have to do is head back to our website, that's horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows. They're all there for you, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. By the way, real quick, I meant to mention this in the previous segment after that Holly Doyle interview, that interview courtesy of our friends at Racing TV, who do a great job sending audio clips from big moments with races in Europe, preview clips and interview clips after the races. So thanks to them with Racing TV for that interview with Holly Doyle. I threw out a poll question this morning, which you can weigh in on at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And the poll question is, if you're in charge of a racetrack where a rider tests positive for COVID-19, how would you handle the situation? And this, of course, coming with the news that came out yesterday with jockeys Luis Saez, Martin Garcia, and Victor Espinoza all testing positive after having ridden at multiple racetracks across the country, including Los Alamitos, Indiana Grand, and Keeneland. And I want to know how you would handle it. If you're in charge of a racetrack, you have several options. You can do nothing, and you can just continue to work with the protocols that you have in place and continue to improve those protocols as best you can to try to keep everybody separated and everybody safe. You can take a Prairie Meadows approach with the jockey colony, if you so choose. Prairie Meadows coming out yesterday and saying that they're going to institute new protocols with horses coming from the states of Texas and Florida who want to run at Prairie Meadows. They will no longer accept an entry unless that horse is sent to a trainer who is already stabled at Prairie Meadows. You could do the same thing with jockeys if you wanted to, and say no outside riders. Only the jockeys who are based here will ride these horses that come in for the races. That's another approach. But I'm curious. I'm sure there are several other ideas out there, and I want to know. It's a conversation that racing is going to have, especially if we continue to see more positive tests. So if you're in charge of a racetrack where a rider tests positive, how are you going to handle that situation? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And we are efforting Bob Edwards now from E5 Racing. Again, rushing fall going in today's Grade 1. Jenny Wiley at Keeneland, the defending champion. And she has been so, so good. Already 1-for-1 here in 2020. She's 9-for-12 lifetime with 2 seconds. She's as honest as they come. And she has a lot of early zip to her. And by the way, if that's not enough, she loves Keeneland. 4-for-5 at Keeneland on that turf course, which should be emerald green and firm later this afternoon. But rushing fall, 6-to-5 on the morning line under Hall of Famer Javier Castellano, who has ridden her pretty much every start, maybe every start of her career. He's the only name you see in the past performances. They know each other very, very well. Javier knows this turf course as good as anybody. And she's going to take some beating. The daughter of More Than Ready going to take some beating later today in that Jenny Wiley. Don't forget, earlier this year, Javier Castellano tested positive for COVID. That was back during the Gulfstream Championship meet. But he's obviously recovered. He was asymptomatic, obviously recovered and doing very, very well. Really looking forward. I hope we can get a hold of Bob because he has done so much, like so many owners have, for the sport of thoroughbred racing. And it's one of those things where, you know, when you, I have so many trainers on this program, and that's great. And you're going to hear from another one, Brad Cox, coming up at 9:40, talking about Monomoy Girl and all of his success. And trainers know the horse extremely well. They're there every single day with the horse, obviously. But owners are the ones that really make this whole game go. It takes a village. Right? You can't say owners are more important than trainers, and you can't say that jockeys are more important. It just doesn't work like that. In our sport, all of these pieces are intertwined and interconnected. But let's face it. Well, I was going to say it starts with the owner, but it really doesn't. If you don't have owners to buy horses, trainers have nothing to train. If trainers have nothing to train, jockeys have nothing to ride. But let's go back further than that. If you don't have breeders and the horse farms that we see throughout the bluegrass and across the country, there are no horses for the owners to buy. So it all ties together. And it starts with these amazing horse farms and with the breeders and the people that spend time in the breeding sheds raising these young babies. And then you have to send them off to be broken. So you have people that do that. This industry is so amazing when you think about all of the moving parts and the pieces that you need to make it all come together. We sit here at home, or we go to the races when we've been allowed to, traditionally, and that will happen again. But we sit now, watch the races, or listen to them on radio. And we're so blessed to be able to do that. But it's only possible because of the work of so, so many people. You know, I don't know, and this is a topic that comes up from time to time on my trainer talk programs, which, by the way, you can go back and listen to on our website, horseracingradio.net. But I don't know if people realize the amount of work and how many things have to go exactly right and how big of an accomplishment it really is to get a horse to the starting gate. Forget about win a race. Forget about winning a stakes race, or a graded stakes race, or a race like the Kentucky Derby. Every time you increase the level of competition, the chances of a horse making it that far, it's like the major leagues in baseball, right? There are an awful lot of kids out there that play Little League. There are a lot of kids that play minor league and play in travel ball. But then those percentages decrease as they move throughout their career. Fewer kids go on to play in high school. Fewer kids go on to play in college. Even fewer still are the number of kids that get drafted and go play in the minor leagues. And then the percentage of minor leaguers that get to the major leagues, well, that percentage is really, really tiny when you think about all of the young kids that start out playing baseball in their lifetime. Same thing with horses. Every time you go up another rung on the ladder, those percentages decrease. So we see horses in the Kentucky Derby, and we see horses on the trail of the Kentucky Derby, and we watch on the first Saturday in May, or this year the first Saturday in September, and we see 20 horses break from the starting gate. And that's the dream. That's the dream. But it is so hard to achieve. I had the percentages once. I don't remember them off the top of my head, but I had the percentages. The percentage You're talking about 20 horses from a full crop of thousands. 20 horses that can actually make it into the starting gate. The odds are not in your favor. Now, the odds are better that your horse is going to get to the starting gate and make his first start running the maiden race. The odds are better. But as I said, even that, just getting to the starting gate, is an amazing accomplishment. And I think we lose sight of that sometimes in our sport. I think we lose sight of how many people it takes to put this sport on. As I said, going back to the folks at the breeding farms who work tirelessly, breeding and foaling and raising these young horses, and then the owners who step up and spend their hard-earned money and say, yeah, I'll play, I'll support this sport. The trainers who go 365 days a year. Horses have to eat Christmas, Thanksgiving. There are no holidays when it comes to working with these animals. And trainers are there. Assistant trainers are there. Exercise riders are there. The horses still have to work out, right? Exercise riders are there. And that, when I start talking about it, I could go on and on, but I find it fascinating the way our sport has so many people that just make it successful. It's pretty cool. And hopefully we'll get a chance. We are still working on getting a hold of Bob Edwards here with E5 Racing. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him coming up in just a couple of minutes with Rushing Fall. I told you the Ashland is on that Keeneland undercard today too. Part of, what, 5 graded stakes on the card here on Saturday. And let me remind you too, our coverage this afternoon presented by Red Brand Fence comes up at 5 o'clock Eastern. You can listen nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201. You can stream us worldwide at horseracingradio.net. And you can listen locally on Hank 96.1 FM here in the Lexington market. If you're in Lexington, 5 to 6 Eastern, you'll be able to hear Bobby Newman and Anthony Stabile as they bring you that coverage of the Bluegrass Stakes. We'll also look back on the Ashland and Jenny Wiley and the other races that have taken place earlier in the day. But that Ashland, when you take a look at the Ashland, short field, only 6 horses, but it's quality. It's quality. And you heard Ken McPeak in the first half of the show, En Voutant, number 4, his entrant in there, didn't need to run Swiss Skydiver because he has En Voutant. She's tough. She's really tough when you look at her dirt form and her route dirt form. Last time out, she wins an allowance race, mile and a 16th. 3 starts ago on the dirt, breaks her maiden, mile and a 16th. He said distance will not be a problem. She's mile and a 16th again today with the Ashland. But she does get a bit of an acid test as she steps into grade 1 company after winning a non-winners of 1 allowance. Her only other stakes try was in the Honey Rider on grass, 2 starts back at Gulfstream. So I think you draw a line through that. She set the pace, backed up to finish 4th. I don't think the grass is her best surface. Our good friend Safi Joseph Jr., native of Barbados, is back with Tonalist Shape, who has been the star of the show down in Florida this year, taking the grade 2 Devona Dale and the grade 3 Forward Gale. Her only bad performance coming in the Gulfstream Park Oaks. Other than that, she has been pretty much flawless. Speech. Maybe get a gauge as to how Swiss Skydiver could fare. Because Speech finished 2nd behind Swiss Skydiver last time out in the grade 2 Santa Anita Oaks. Javier Castellano back aboard Speech. To me, she looks like she could be very, very dangerous. You have Venetian Harbor from the barn of Richard Baltus. Another one who was runner-up to Swiss Skydiver. That came at Oaklawn in the Grade 3 Fantasy. Joel Rosario is going to be aboard Venetian Harbor 6-5 on the morning line for Venetian Harbor. She's your favorite in the Ashland later today. Again, the 6 3-year-old fillies looking to punch their ticket to the Kentucky Oaks. Bob Edwards set to join us here in just a minute, and our producer Lee Della Pina back in our Lexington studios. I, of course, am in our home studio here, and Lee, Bob was just texting me. He said, go ahead and call him again, and we'll try to get him patched through and see if we can get a few words about rushing fall before we have to get to our next commercial break. But the good news is the next segment's open, so we have a little more time to visit with Bob when we get him on the line here this morning on the Equine Forum. Don't forget to follow us on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, another way to do it. And the poll question today, if you're in charge of a racetrack where a rider does test positive for COVID-19, how would you handle the situation? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, for your responses to that one. Well, Bob Edwards is indeed with us now here on HRRN. Bob, good morning, my friend.
Morning. How you doing?
Things are good. You know, I was just talking about some of the other graded stakes, the Ashland, the Bluegrass Stakes, but the grade one Coolmore Jenny Wiley, 1 mile and a 16th on the what will be a firm turf at Keeneland today, features, well, the star of the show, Rushing Fall, a filly that you own, now a mare, 5-year-old mare, the defending champion. When I say the name Rushing Fall, what things come to mind?
You know, it's always emotional. You know, it's been a phenomenal ride with her, you know, from the Breeders' Cup, you know, through, you know, the last, you know, 2 years. It's, you know, every time, you know, we see her run, it's just, it's really super exciting. As you know, winning is difficult at best, and to have, you know, a mare that constantly wins and constantly comes to run is really exciting.
Yeah, I touched on this earlier, but she's made 12 starts in her career, 9 wins, 2 seconds. She's earned more than $2 million. Of course, she's a Breeders' Cup champion, defending champion in the Jenny Wiley, multiple grade one winner. Do you remember the first time you laid eyes on Rushing Fall?
Yeah, I was walking around with Mike Ryan. You know, I had really good luck with More Than Ready. So I had a horse that I'd bought, Keeneland Horse Racing HCL, named Zendaya. Gave her Chad, and my first win as a race owner was the Intercontinental with her. So, you know, I was a big fan of the sire, and when we saw the baby, you know, it just, she looked like she checked all the boxes. You know, confirmationally, she was great. She was a really good looker, and, you know, fingers crossed, we perched her and sent her down to Stone Street in Ocala, and Ian Brennan, the team there, you know, turned her into a racehorse and then dropped her in Chad's hands, and the rest is history.
Well, I'm glad you bring up your first win. What led Bob Edwards to get involved with owning racehorses?
Dumb luck. my wife's from Saratoga, and we went up to visit her folks. And this is part of mine. Had actually bought a house at Fifth Ave, and he said, "You know, come by, bring your daughter Cassidy. I want to take you to the backside." And I've been, you know, we're from New York. You know, we went to school in upstate New York. And, you know, the track was a day or two every summer. We'd go and drink some beers and lose some money. And, you know, we're looking forward to going. And we went to the backside. I'd never seen anything like it. You know, and we've been going to track for a number of years, and I'd never seen anything like it. And automatically fell in love, you know, loving on horses, petting horses, seeing how they're cared for. And we kind of spilled right into the auction. And it was like, you know, due diligence day where people were walking around and checking out, you know, what was in the stalls and pulling horses out. And I ended up meeting Mike Ryan that day, and Mike spent like 3 or 4 hours with my daughter and I just going through, looking at horses, pointing, you know, confirmation out, things he liked. And Mike likes everything about horses, so it was easy. And I said, you know, Mike, find me a horse. Find me a New York bred, and, you know, maybe next year we'll be able to run in Saratoga and make it a little more exciting. You know, I came home after our purchase, and I actually had to duck out of a wedding to get Mike on the phone and buy the horse, and came back in Florida and said, you know, this is great. And I looked at the stats and I said, we have no shot at actually having that horse run statistically. So that's when we started buying horses in Keeneland. And that was the new money honey lot, and kind of went to Zendaya and moved forward off of that.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. As we were working to make the connection with you, I was going through kind of sharing my thoughts. This is something I think gets overlooked in the sport, but just to get a horse to the racetrack? First of all, it takes a village, right? It starts with the breeders who breed the horses and the people that raise them on the farms, and then the owners like yourself who step up and buy them, the trainers, the people who break the horses. But just to get a horse to the starting gate, the percentages of that are not great. And forget about winning a grade one race. Just to get a horse in the starting gate for a maiden race is an accomplishment, isn't it?
Oh, indeed, yeah. And like you said, it takes an entire team of people. And, you know, the pucker factor when that phone rings from the farm, from Ocala, you know, from wherever it is in Kentucky, you know, every time, or a trainer, you know, you automatically think the worst. So, you know, most times it isn't, but, you know, during breeding season when we're dropping babies, you know, that phone rings at 7 o'clock in the morning. You're like, oh God, no. Or, you know, you have babies up at Ocala ready to ship and that phone rings. You're like, oh no, you know, so it's really fulfilling to get a horse to the track and even more so to win, and to have a consistent winner is the best feeling ever.
When you get people that come up to you and talk to you about being owners, and maybe they're thinking about getting involved, or they ask you about the horses you've had, what do you tell them, Bob? What's the best part about being a thoroughbred racehorse owner?
Up until about 120 days ago, you know, the best part of the sport is—it's the most social sport in the world. It is a phenomenal experience at every level to be involved in horse racing. From a social perspective, it's great. But then the adrenaline spike, that 5 minutes when you're getting to the gate and the race and after the race, there's nothing like it. It's our opportunity to own our own sports franchise at some level.
How difficult has it been to have to sit home and watch your horses run from home? I know you like to be there. Has it been hard?
You know, it's a little different, right? I do enjoy. My family enjoys going track. My daughter Cassidy is in Lexington, and she'll be going and representing the family today. You know, we've been watching from our finish line on the couch, and it's not the same. It really isn't. And we do enjoy going to the races. You know, we're talking to, you know, our team, our trainers, and everybody on the ground on a regular basis. You know, it's something we'll have to work through, and I can't wait for things to open back up. I'm not sure when it'll do it, but it does take the energy out of it. Like, you know, Keeneland, it's a little different now, right? Obviously, you know, we're not going to fly out because we'll watch it at home. Saratoga, we're not sure how that's going to play out for us. Being in Florida, we got a 2-week mandatory quarantine going to New York, so we'll let that play out and figure out what we're going to do next steps. But I said earlier, I love the social aspect of it. And, you know, when you're winning or people around you are winning, I mean, it's infectious. It's great. You see your friends winning. You know, there's nothing better than that from an emotional high.
Talking to owner Bob Edwards, E5 Racing, they have had a ton of success in the sport in a very short period of time. You heard him mention the name New Money Honey, who gave him multiple Great Stakes victories. They had Seek and Destroy. I guess Indaya is another one, right, who won the Grade 2 Goldakova Stakes for you back in 2016. And then, of course, Rushing Fall, the defending champion in today's Jenny Wiley at Keeneland. Talk about some of those other horses that, Bob, when you think back on what you've been part of so far, that you're always going to remember.
You know, it was the Breeders' Cup that, you know, Rushing Fall won. Because after she won, Good Magic won as well. So we had a doubleheader Breeders' Cup, and it was about as exciting as the New Money Honey Breeders' Cup win. And that Sunday, Zendaya won the Goldakova. So we've had, you know, a lot of success, you know, in that Breeders' Cup time frame. I mean, the Breeders' Cup is phenomenal. It's a great week, just like the Derby. It's a great week, and you go there, and the pomp and circumstance is phenomenal. It's, you know, it's some of the best racing in the world. Those memories are really special.
Rushing Fall comes into the Jenny Wiley off of a win in the Grade 3 Bogey at Belmont last time out. That was on June 3rd. What did Chad tell you as she was making her way back to the races for that 2020 debut? And then after the race, what did he have to say about her?
You know, she got a later start, obviously, than we wanted. But, you know, he's done a great job managing her. You know, he's done a great job managing a lot of, you know, mares in their later stage or later career. And, you know, she was ready, you know, and he confirmed that, and obviously she did too. So it was exciting to see her run. It took a big sigh of relief, you know, after she crossed the wire, and, you know, I got the phone call that she came back, you know, sound. And, you know, we made the conscious effort to go to Keeneland to give her just a touch more space, And she seems to run better with a little more space. And you point out, you know, we've really actually run her a few times and managed her career properly. And that's a testament to Chad and his style of running.
How does it work, that relationship with you and Chad, and deciding where the horses are going to run? How much input do you have, or do you leave it up to him? How does that all come together, Bob?
You know, ultimately, Chad, you know, he is a magician at slotting races and working the condition book. We do talk frequently, you know, a couple times a week, you know, text or talk back and forth, and, you know, try to find the best spot for the horse. As you know, he's got, you know, some of the best turf mares in the country, and depending on the distance, you know, he's got newspaper record and Uni and Sister Charlie, you know. So, you know, we try to slot and properly place those horses. At some point, they're going to match up at some level. But you either, you know, run with them or run against them. So, you know, I'm going to run against them if I'm not with them. So, you know, it's a conscious effort to put horses in his barn and set them up for success.
Moving forward, outside of Rushing Fall and some of the horses we've talked about, who are some of the other E5 stars we should keep an eye on as we make our way throughout 2020?
Wow, good question. I have a lot of nice babies, and, you know, obviously we get a little late start, so we'll see how they kind of turn out. I have a horse with Chad named Red Light Racer that's up in Saratoga that shows some promise. I have Valid Point is back. Mike Ryan and myself own Valid Point. I didn't fire last race. You know, a little timid on the rail, so we're hoping that he gets back to his, you know, secretariat form and kind of comes back again. You know, a lot of babies. You know, I'm not sure. You know, it's tough to tell until I see him run.
Well, I'll tell you what, your enthusiasm for this sport is infectious, and I know that if people are thinking about getting involved in the game, they couldn't do any better than to sit down and spend a few minutes talking with you. And, you know, Bob, listen, all the best with Rushing Fall later today, and can't thank you enough for spending a few minutes with me here on the show this morning. You're a class act, and keep up the great work.
No worries. Thanks. Have a great day.
All right, Bob Edwards here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests, by the way, who appear on the program, going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. And I tell you, every week to go to that website, and you won't be disappointed. The product, the quality of their products is unparalleled. I have so many Embrace the Race caps and shirts and other items here at the house that are just incredible. So EmbraceTheRace.com is the place to go. Yeah, great stuff from Bob Edwards. And he is as enthusiastic as anybody about this sport. And now here he is with Rushing Fall, looking to defend her title in the Jenny Wiley later today. Post time for the Jenny Wiley, by the way, 4:57 Eastern. So it won't be live on our broadcast as we come on the air at 5 o'clock. But we will look back on that race later today for you as we take you up to the Grade 2 Bluegrass, which is going to be run right around 5:30 Eastern time. All right, I'll get to a break. I'll come back with more and look ahead to my next guest, who is trainer Brad Cox, who comes up at 9:40 Eastern time. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Get on the fast track to fun. This summer, Ellis Park Racing and Gaming has an action-packed schedule, including the 2020 Run Happy Summer Meet at Ellis Park. The Run Happy Ellis Park Derby will be the track's first ever Kentucky Derby qualifying race. Preview the action August 2nd with the Run Happy Kentucky Downs Preview Day. Then, on August 9th, catch the excitement of the Run Happy Ellis Park Derby, where the winner is almost guaranteed a spot in the Kentucky Derby. We can't wait to make history with you this summer. Visit Ellis Park Racing .com for details.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Deep in the heart of horse country, from these Kentucky hills has sprung a legacy rivaled by few. From the all-time greats of yesterday to the breed-shaping bloodlines of today, our roots hold strong with the promise of tomorrow. For over a century, our passion has guided us to where we stand and everything we stand for. Claiborne Farm, the tradition continues.
Ruidoso Downs Racetrack and Casino continues live racing every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through Labor Day. Don't miss your chance to watch and wager every weekend on thoroughbred and quarter horse racing from the mountains of New Mexico. You'll find a simulcast broadcast of Ruidoso Downs races along with free PPs at raceruidoso.com. Visit your favorite ADW provider to place your bet. Ruidoso Downs Racetrack and Casino, home to the world's richest quarter horse race, the All-American Futurity. Guaranteed excitement, you bet.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, taking you through this Saturday morning program. Again, one more guest yet to come. That is trainer Brad Cox, who has just been on a roll lately. He won both the Indiana Oaks and Indiana Derby this past Wednesday evening at Indiana Grand, and now looking toward his champion, Monomoy Girl, who comes up in the Grade 2 Ruffian at Belmont Park later this afternoon. It is part of an afternoon that features 10 graded stakes races being contested at four different tracks throughout North America, and the Ruffian, Monomoy Girl, is going to be a heavy, heavy favorite, and she really does, on paper, from a class perspective, speed perspective, pace, whatever you want to look at it, she lays over that field. Should be a handful if she handles the surface there today. Told you that there could be some rain in the New York area, so it could be a wet track, and if that's the case, we'll have to see how Monomoy Girl handles it, but she has handled just about anything they've thrown at her throughout her career. And what, hey, by the way, how cool would it be if she continues to progress? And we know how good Midnight Bisou is. That last race was absolutely stellar in the Fleur de Lis. They continue on a collision course with each other, and we have that rivalry again. Remember, it was a couple of years ago before Monomoy Girl got hurt and had to leave the racetrack there for a little bit. But now that she's back and looks like she's in top form, how cool would that rivalry be to watch in the second half of the year, making our way down the road to the Breeders' Cup Distaff? Be really cool. Well, I thought I'd do something a little bit different. I was sitting around the house yesterday getting ready for this program, doing some research and thinking through some different things and some different angles to these races that we could talk about here this morning. And as everybody knows, when I... Well, maybe you don't know. Maybe you haven't heard me say it. But when I go to the casino, the game I love to play is craps. And in the game of craps, the numbers 7 and 11 are automatic winners prior to the shooter establishing a point on what they call the come-out roll. And with this show airing on July 11th, or 7-11, which is also, by the way, a most unusual date to be talking about the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland, I thought it would be kind of fun to spend a few minutes paying tribute to these lucky numbers. And we'll do it horse racing style. In the storied history of the Bluegrass Stakes, only 11 horses have pulled off the Bluegrass Kentucky Derby double. Skipaway holds the record for the fastest Bluegrass, stopping the clock in 1:47 and 1/5. And last year's winner, Vekoma, rolled home as the favorite at odds of 7-5. When Swiss Skydiver attempts to make history in today's Bluegrass Stakes, she'll become just the second filly to take on the boys in this prestigious race since Keeneland's inaugural spring meet in 1937. If she somehow finds herself posing for a picture in the winner's circle, she'll not only become the first filly ever to win the Bluegrass, she'll do it with a saddle towel displaying lucky number 7. Should there be an upset in today's Bluegrass, it could come from number 11, Hunt the Fox, who hails from the barn of Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito, who would surpass Ben Jones, Woody Stevens, Leroy Jolly, and Todd Pletcher for most wins in the Bluegrass Stakes. The numbers 7 and 11 also find themselves tied to other contenders in this year's Bluegrass. Take 11-time Sovereign Award winner Mark Cassie, for example. He'll give a leg up to jockey Joel Rosario, whose lone win in the Bluegrass came in 2011 aboard Longshot Brilliant Speed. Who was second that day, you ask? Well, that was number 7, Twinspired. Jockey Rafael Bejarano is back at Keeneland, hoping to win the Bluegrass a second time. His only other win, you guessed it, was this one in 2007.
And they're moving by the quarter pole to the Toyota Bluegrass. Teufelsberg leads it a length and a half. Great Hunter still seconds. And Harrow looking toward the inside. Now Street Sense tries to get on track on the far outside. Four horses in a line at the eighth pole. Teufelsberg still has a short lead. Street Sense is there. San Harrow, Great Hunter, Dominican running late. Teufelsberg, San Harrow, Street Sense, Dominican. It's wide open, coming to the line. A multiple horse photo finish. What a renewal of the Toyota Bluegrass. 1 minute 51 and 1/5 seconds.
Dominican, who would wind up with more third place finishes than wins in his career, seven to be exact, held off eventual Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, and he did it by a nose. And since we're talking about the Kentucky Derby, well, Street Sense, of course, is one of just seven horses to win the Derby from post position number seven.
As they approach the top of the stretch, and there's Street Sense with a huge move on the far turn, and Calvin Burrell saving ground every step of the way, but it's hard spun to catch as they come off the turn. A mile and 37 flat, and Street Sense draws alongside as they move headlong into the final furlong, and Street Sense has roared from 19th position to first in the Derby. Hardspun tries to hold for second, and then find the back in Sensefield on any given Saturday. And here is Street Sense, a stretch running sensation to win the Derby by two.
And you might also remember the most recent horse to wear the roses after breaking from post seven.
And they're into the stretch, and it's just Defiant Mike Smith turning for home in front. Good Magic and Jose Ortiz a length behind as they come into the final furlong. Bravazo's down the center of the track, and then Audible on the inside, who's now up in a third. Justify a two-length lead as they come to the final 16th. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside, then it's still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome! Justify has won the Kentucky Derby! It was very close for second. Audible may have got there inside of Good Magic. Then it's still Regard. In a final time of 2 minutes 4.20 seconds, he's still undefeated.
Yeah, some people might say I had too much time on my hands yesterday getting ready for the show, but thought I'd have a little fun. It's amazing how many times the numbers 7 and 11 collide in the Bluegrass Stakes, especially pertaining to this year's field, and, of course, in the Kentucky Derby. 7 come 11, yo 11, whatever you want to say. The maybe the play in the Bluegrass today is the, on this July 11th, is the Craps Players exacta. The 7-11, Swiss Skydiver, Hunt the Fox. Box them, and we'll see where it ends up. Maybe pay you $711 or something like that. I don't know. But anyways, had a little fun there and going to have fun in the next segment with trainer Brad Cox. He's coming up to talk about Monomoy Girl and all of his contenders coming up later today. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Adina Springs bred and raced Awesome Again's best son in Horse of the Year and Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. Now one of the most consistently brilliant sires this century, producing 11% black type winners, 6% graded winners, and 17% black type horses, highlighted by 12 grade 1 winners, 8 millionaires, and 5 champions. Adina Springs also bred and raced Ghost Sapper's best son, champion, multiple grade 1 winner, and Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic grade 1 double.
It's going to be a photo finish!
Shaman Ghost out towards the middle of the track. It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Believe in the first Shaman Ghost yearlings appearing at the sales this fall. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Mark your calendars for the biggest night of racing in Charlestown history. For the first time, the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks will be run on the same night, Friday, August 28th. This wild and wonderful card features 7 stakes races worth over $1.2 million combined. The special first post time is scheduled for 5 o'clock Eastern under the Friday night lights. It's the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks on Friday, August 28th, here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology.
Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here's Monomoy Girl now. Monomoy Girl switches to the outside, and it's coming with her rally. A little bit wide off the turn, but nonetheless, she puts her nose in front. Monomoy Girl, the one to catch now with 3/16 to go. Red Dane rolls up on the outside, closing in. Chalk Veuve to me, Ms. Bigley, center of the track. It's Lady Kate down inside. It's Fashion Faux Pas. But Monomoy Girl's got a four-length lead and 100 yards to go. And Monomoy Girl, another stylish performance beneath the Twin Spires, is on her way. Winning by three in the end, Red Dane was second, Miss Bigley was third, Estilo Feminino got up for fourth.
Monomoy Girl on her way indeed. What an impressive comeback effort for Monomoy Girl. And what a great training job by Brad Cox getting her ready to fire. That was Travis Stone with the call of her allowance victory. And she's back in action later today in the Grade 2 Ruffian Stakes, which, by the way, is going to be run earlier on the card because it is not a huge field, and she's a huge favorite. So she probably, you would imagine, deterred many owners and trainers from running against her in that spot. But it will be race number 4, post time for the Ruffian, 2:55 Eastern. And the main competition here could come from second-choice Mother Mother from the barn of Bob Baffert, who is 5-2. But Monomoy Girl, 2-5, and she is the class of the field. There's no doubt about it. She has won 10 of 12 lifetime starts, 2 seconds to go along with those 10 wins. She surpassed $3 million in career earnings with that win in her optional claim or allowance race at Churchill on May 16th. And she, look, I mean, she is just absolutely brilliant, and should be fun to watch her progress and make her way through the second half of the season. 5-year-old mare, daughter of Gainesway Stallion Tapazar, and efforting Brad Cox now. We'll get a chance to talk to him about Monomoy Girl, and we'll ask him about his big night at Indiana Grand, taking the Indiana Oaks and the Indiana Derby on Wednesday, and also going to get a chance to talk to him about his contenders in today's Jenny Wiley. He has one in the Jenny Wiley, one in the Ashland. I think I misspoke earlier and said both were in the Jenny Wiley. That's not the case. He has one in the Jenny Wiley, Juliet Foxtrot. And in the Ashland Stakes, he has Bonnie South. John Velasquez aboard Bonnie South. Louis Saez aboard Juliet Foxtrot today, or was scheduled to be aboard. But as I told you, Louis, one of the jockeys that tested positive for COVID, he is off his mounts, and there will be a replacement rider on Juliet Foxtrot. But we'll talk to Brad Cox coming up here in just a minute. Lee, just got a text from Brad. He's ready to go, so go ahead and give him a call. We'll get him patched through, and we'll look forward to catching up with him. But do they come much better? Again, I am so fired up for what could be a tremendous showdown in the second half of the year. Monomoy Girl and Midnight Bisou. Steve Asmussen and our good friend Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing Stable, the owners of Midnight Bisou, saying that they think she might be the best horse in the country. Forget about mare, female horse. She might be the best horse in the country. And the way she ran in the Fleur-de-Lis, it's hard to argue that fact. She's really, really good, and she's on top of her game right now. But what a fun second half of the year it would be if Monomoy Girl continues to progress and becomes the Monomoy Girl we're all accustomed to seeing, maybe even better, and then hooks up with Midnight Bisou again, and that rivalry, kind of a Sunday Silence easygoer-esque, if you will. Well, Brad Cox is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
How much fun would it be for you if we could get that rivalry stirred up again?
I mean, it would be great. It would be great for racing. You know, it's something, you know, we're gradually trying to get her back going. You know, it's been a long road back, but so far so good this year. And, you know, we'll take that next step forward today.
Yeah, we talked during that Churchill race, I think right before the Churchill race, and you mentioned that there might be a few butterflies when she goes into the gate, and once they come out, it's all up to her. What was it like as you were watching her load?
I got a little nervous. I feel like over the years, you know, I don't get as nervous as I used to when I first started training and stuff. And, you know, it's definitely some anxious moments before the race at Churchill. And there'll be some more today. So we'll see, I guess.
I'm sure there will be. What did she show you in that return race on May 16th?
She overcome a lot. I mean, you know, it was a nice group of fillies. She was, you know, was in tight. She was in behind horses, and Florent did a good job of, getting her to relax a bit, and then, you know, finding a seam and, giving her a good trip. And, I thought she overcame some things in that race that we maybe in some tight spots where, you know, she necessarily was not in as a three-year-old. So it was a big race off the layoff, and I feel like she's come out of it and, move forward since.
What's the weather look like in New York today? Are we going to have a wet track?
As of right now, it's wet. I'm actually in Kentucky. Okay. I did not make the ship. I sent my son up with her last week, and everything's been great moving along. It does look like there's definitely going to be some moisture in the track today. I don't know what it'll be labeled by post time, so we'll just have to see how it plays out. But she worked the other day. There was some moisture in the ground. Well, our comeback race, it was labeled. I don't know exactly if it was labeled muddy or what, but there's a lot of moisture in the track that day. And when she breezed last Saturday at Belmont, there was some moisture in the track. So she doesn't mind it. And, she's pretty tough. She first two starts were on turf as a two-year-old, and I think she'll run on anything, to be honest with you.
Yeah, nothing seems to phase her. And you're right, it was listed as sloppy officially in that race at Churchill Downs. And if it's wet today at Belmont, you would think that the off-going wouldn't be an issue for her because she's handled all of them. Is there a difference, though, Brad, in a wet track at Belmont Park as opposed to a wet track at Churchill?
Oh, I'm sure there is, but I can't really tell you the difference, to be honest with you. Other than, you know, it just is what it is. But no, you know, we race on both tracks, and I think the biggest thing with her, given the track condition up there. I mean, look, she's drawn 5 of 5. I mean, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, hopefully it's an uneventful trip for her, hopefully a winning trip, but, you know, not only that, an uneventful trip, and, you know, we'll see how things unfold going up the backside. But, you know, a filly like her, she's always shows up, so we'll see.
You know, I said at the top of the show, Brad, that you would be hard-pressed to find a hotter trainer than Brad Cox over the past couple of years. It's been a great run for you. What's been the key to really taking things to a whole new level?
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, as far as, like, you know, your help, that's one of the biggest things. Clientele, giving you, trusting you with quality horses, great clients, and allowing you to do what needs to be done with the horses, whether when it comes to placement or time off. And, you know, it's just about having clients that listen to you and help that get along and work well, and, you know, dedicated employees. So, you know, those are just two things. But it's a lot, and it's, you know, quality horses and, you know, the right spots, I think, is the biggest thing. So as far as, you know, placement, you know, there's several things that go into it. But, you know, it's been a great run, and we hopefully can continue it today and the rest of the year, and just trying to get a little better all the time, really.
Yeah, you know, I like the fact that you talked about your son going to New York with Monomoy Girl a few days ago and being up there with her. It's got to be cool for you to have this kind of success and have your son involved and be able to do it with him by your side.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he actually led her over for the cotillion, which that actually didn't end up well. But he shipped with her to Parks, took care of her the whole time, and he's been around her for a long time. So, you know, he knows her very well, and she knows him. So it works out well. And it's great. I mean, you know, honestly, we're busy and we're working all the time, and it's, you know, I think I need to step back and look at sometimes, like, you know, what these boys are, or young men, I should say, are doing, and the contribution they're putting into this business, that they're probably going to do their own thing at some point. I'm not ready for them to leave by no means, nor will I let them anytime soon, because they're very valuable to what we're doing and what we're accomplishing here, and it means a lot to me, and I think them as well.
Yeah, did you always encourage your son to follow in your footsteps and go down this path, or did you maybe want him to do something else at some point?
No. I tried to get him to stay in school as long as I could, and they didn't want any part of that. So now they're good. They're like I said, they're good boys, and they're good horsemen too. Believe me, I'm not sending him up there with her just because he's my son, Blake. I'm sending him up there because he's a really, really good horseman, and he knows her inside and out, and I trust him as much as anyone. He does a fantastic job.
Visiting with trainer and proud father Brad Cox here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Let's talk, Brad, just about the couple of horses you're going to saddle today at Keeneland. You have Bonnie South, who's going in the Grade 1 Ashland, and then Juliet Foxtrot in the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley. Start with Bonnie South. She has been really, really good, much like Monomoy Girl in some respects, as she gets her career started, winner of the Grade 2 Florida Oaks, or Fairgrounds Oaks, last time out.
Yeah, she's come off a little bit of a layoff. Obviously, that's, not by design, but she's been in training the whole time. After the Fairgrounds Oaks, Keeneland canceled their meet, and Churchill looked like it was going to be postponed, and obviously the Oaks was pushed to September, so we knew we had enough points to be in the Oaks, so just talked it over with Garrett O'Rourke and just thought, we have her there at Keeneland. If Keeneland run, there was rumor that there was going to be an abbreviated meet there at Keeneland. Obviously, that's taking place this week, and so we'd run her out of her own stall there in the Ashland. She's been there since late March, and she's trained extremely well. And, I think if she can get a good setup. We did find out about this, a couple things with this filly the last couple starts. We added some blinkers, but, I think she just wants to be left alone early, kind of come with one run, and it seemed to work out extremely well the last two starts. So we're hoping she can get a good setup today, and she's doing well. She's really developed, I just think, since the Fairgrounds Oaks as well. I think she's grown, filled out, and looks amazing. So Johnny Velasquez is on her today for the first time, and he doesn't need any instructions when riding a racehorse. He's one of the best of all time, and hopefully with a clean trip, she'll be in the mix.
Yeah, Ken McPeak, we heard an interview with him in the first half of the program this morning, and he was asked about Mike Smith and if he gives any directions to Mike Smith in the bluegrass today when he climbs aboard Swiss Skydiver. And he said, do you say anything to Picasso or Rembrandt when you hand him the brush? He says, no, you just hand him the brush and let him go. Same thing with Johnny V, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure. He's a world-class rider, and I feel fortunate to have him on her today, and we'll see how it ends up.
Who will replace Louis Saez aboard Juliet Foxtrot in the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley?
Tyler Gaffleone.
All right, Tyler Gaffleone in for Louis Saez. Look, I mean, Juliet Foxtrot is a 5-year-old mare that loves Keeneland. Two starts there, a first and a second, and she's another one that is honest as they come.
Yeah, she's a hard-trying filly. I think she just got a little late last time. May have been a little keyed up doing that last start off that layoff. She's another one that was pretty – I mean, she was ready to run the first week there at Keeneland. We've been pointing her for a conditional allowance race. We thought it'd be a good start just to get her back going off the layoff. And then, obviously, we kind of had to shut her down a little bit and get her cranked back up. She was a touch fresh last time in the mint julep. Never really settled like you need to settle against a large field of fillies and mares going two turns. Hopefully it looks like there's a little speed in there today. Hopefully she can get a nice stalking trip going into the first turn. And, like you said, she does like Keeneland. She ran a huge race over there last year. Turning for home in the First Lady, I actually thought she had a shot to win it until Uni kicked on. She was a clear winner. But, she's honest. She shows up, and hopefully she'll get a good trip as well.
And then tomorrow you have a couple of horses in the final day of that shortened meet, the Transylvania Stakes Grade 3 and the Elkhorn Grade 2. Tell me about those two races real quick.
Well, we have Arklo in the Elkhorn. He's coming out of the Louisville Handicap, and that was off of a layoff. I thought he ran really well. Was maybe a little unlucky to not get the job done, but
he's been training well since, and hopefully he got some out of that last race. Then we have Caninos in the Transylvania. He was Clipped Heels coming out of the gate last time, lost the rider, and just draw a line through that one. So this is really what you could say his first race off of a long layoff or a layoff since March. So but he's been in training the whole time, and hopefully he'll get a good trip tomorrow. And this horse probably wants to run a mile in Nace Beyond, which is still trying to wait, trying to find some races that suit him. I think he'll be a horse that gets better with distance and age moving forward.
There he is, Brad Cox, ladies and gentlemen. Class act and one heck of a horse trainer, too, and a great dad to his kids, as you could tell. Brad, listen, appreciate the visit this morning. As always, you're always very gracious with your time. Good luck today, good luck tomorrow, and moving forward as well. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mike. Talk to you soon.
All right, and that interview brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by going to embracetherace.com. I'll get to one final break. I'll come back and wrap it up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Anchor Down has built a 5-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainsway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of 3-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half-brother to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu, Anchor Down strongly resembles his champion sire. And buyers agree, with First Crop Yearlings selling for up to $250,000 in 2019 and First Crop 2-year-olds selling for up to $270,000 this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile. Join me and Bobby Newman for Red Brand Radio every Wednesday through Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern on HRRN. We'll bring you all of the action from the nation's top tracks like Belmont Park, Churchill Downs, Gulfstream Park, Keeneland, Del Mar, and Saratoga, as well as interviews with some of the top jockeys, trainers, and owners in the game. That's Red Brand Radio on HRRN. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
My thanks to all of our guests who helped make this show possible this morning, including Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito, trainer Kenny McPeak, owner Bob Edwards from E5 Racing, and trainer Brad Cox. Don't forget, this afternoon, our coverage of the Grade 2 Bluegrass Stakes comes up right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Sirius 219, XM 201, Hank 96.1 here in Lexington if you're listening locally, and, of course, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. You can tune in 5 to 6 Eastern. Bobby Newman and Anthony Stabile will have the coverage for you later this afternoon here on HRRN. Been a busy program. Great day of racing coast to coast, and hunker down. Sit by the radio, pop on the TV, and enjoy a great day of thoroughbred racing all over the country and all throughout North America, really. It's going to be pretty special. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, and our Lexington studios, to Chauncey for handling all of our social media here this morning, and to all of you who tuned in for these 2 hours and took time to weigh in on our poll question at HRN on Twitter. I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Steelers.